Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Kosh, and you're listening to Pantheon Podcasts.
History in five songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Well, hello once again for another episode of History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcast. We're pleased, as always, to be part of this always vast expanding Pantheon Podcast Network. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, Simplecast, and over 40 other podcast platforms. All right, so we're up to episode 167 here. I'm calling this Consensus Worst Songs. So the idea here, I don't know, I was Facebooking with someone, maybe it was in regular Facebook, maybe it was a private messenger or whatever. Often when I have these discussions with people, a light bulb goes off in my head to come up with an episode. Actually, I was talking to a buddy of mine, Ed, recently, and we were talking about Aerosmith versus the Rolling Stones. And I thought, there's a whole episode there in the, something similar that we did on Sea of Tranquility, this band on steroids kind of thing. But the idea of how is Aerosmith an improvement on the Stones, and is it really, or is it more like you should be comparing Aerosmith with Led Zeppelin? And then that got me thinking, and I started debating with Ed on this, because he's quite a knowledgeable Stones fan, the whole idea of when did the Rolling Stones get their sound? I won't go any further than that, because I may actually do a whole episode on that, but it's kind of an interesting question. I started looking into it. Anyways, this is one that came up. And yes, so I'm calling this Consensus Worst Songs. And the whole idea here is, of course, every band has the songs that people love to hate from that band, or, people have their list of the worst songs by that band. There's nothing really interesting in that. Everybody's got to have some songs at the bottom, right? Although it is kind of interesting. Maybe it might be an idea to look at those bands where people are really vehement that this band has no bad songs kind of thing. Because it's a little bit like that, because what we're talking about here is those bands that, they definitely have a song that comes to mind for a lot of people when you think of worst songs, hence the title, the word consensus in the title of this episode. So the idea here is that these are bands, and these are examples of songs by these bands that would win by a long shot, put it that way. And some of them I cheat at where there's one or two. But I looked at a whole lot of different bands and realized that there's a lot of bands that definitely there is no consensus on what that band's worst songs are. So, I want to talk a little bit about the psychology of this and why people do this. I'll mention a little bit now, but this idea that I think everybody likes complaining about certain things that their favorite bands do, and it's nice when you have a really, really short complaint, the elevator pitch of complaints, where you can just kind of dismiss a whole album and say, oh man, that song and that album, right, sort of thing, essentially you have a short way of communicating a complaint to someone, because all you got to mention is a song title sort of thing. But some of these are worse songs by these bands for different reasons, and we're going to go into them why. Let me see what else I had here. I thought, these are songs that maybe are so bad, so bad that they're good in an ironic way, and maybe the band even jokes about them, or maybe they would even trot them out and play them live. Or these are songs sometimes, irony is a big thing with bands and covering and rock through the generations. So maybe some of these are songs that bands actually covered by these bands just to be cheeky and cover what's considered their worst song kind of thing. But yeah, so the idea here again is that You know, these are kind of consensus winners. People always think of these songs when they're thinking of these bands. And in the fine tradition of History and Five Songs with Martin Popoff, I'm going to do the first one as the first one that came to mind for this before I started going looking for other examples. So something just rushes right to the top of your head, and that is it. That is the clue. So take a listen to this. This is Rush with Tai Chan. All right, Tai Chan. So this is an interesting one. So, you know, Rush fans love to debate all of this sort of thing. You know, worst songs, best songs. Rush fans don't complain a lot, though. Rush fans are more just reverent about everything. But Tai Chan is the one song that always comes to mind. It's from Hold Your Fire, came out September 8th, 1987. So remember, they're getting pretty keyboardy on Power Windows, and they're getting really keyboardy and light and just not heavy at all. There's really no heavy guitar on this record. It's not a heavy album at all. But Tai Chan comes in for a lot of complaint, and the idea is, I think that, you know, it was a case of Neil Peart kind of jumping the shark, going too far with his travelogue lyrics, going too far with the ponderousness and you know, knowledge gained from traveling to these far off places. Maybe it sounds a little elitist as well. Maybe it sounds a little bit cultural appropriation before there was sort of such a term. And it's also very light, and you know, there are hints of sort of Chinese music in it, sort of thing. But yeah, just a quick quote of some of the lyrics here. I stood at the top of the mountain and China sang to me in the peaceful haze of harvest time, a song of eternity. If you raise your hands to heaven, you will live 100 years. I stood there like a mystic, lost in the atmosphere. Goes on, reaching to the eastern sea, I looked upon a presence spanning 40 centuries. I thought of time and distance, the hardship of history. So he's being very professorial here, the professor, and that, I think, rubbed people the wrong way as well. And another thing of the psychology of this that comes to mind, Hold Your Fire is probably, there's Hold Your Fire, there's Presto, there's Test for Echo, are the records that are sort of least appreciated by Rush. And often you will find these songs are going to clump up and you know, originate from the most hated records as well. So it's almost like a two-step process where, you know, you've got the worst record of 12 songs or 10 songs or whatever, and then the worst song on that record is it really stands out because you think, okay, this is the nadir, this is the absolute abyss of the you know, the catalog of this band, sort of thing. So Tai Chan definitely fits that bill. And of course, the other one from Rush, there are two for Rush, and everybody knows, if you're a deep Rush fan, you know what the other one is. It's Dog Years from Test for Echo, with all those little doggy puns in it and stuff. Season of the Bitch and all that kind of stuff. So again, the idea is not a lot of people appreciate the Test for Echo album. That one's also got the internet song on it. So you know, we can actually do a whole episode on that. You know, songs that are about nascent technology and how they sound dated after a while. Cyber this and cyber that, internet highway, right? Or the World Wide Web, right? You know, you hear these phrases thrown around in some of those early songs, and then of course, you've got the album covers where it's like early computer graphics and they look terrible now, kind of thing, right? So yeah, Rush has two of these. Tai Chan from Hold Your Fire and Dog Years from Test for Echo. So let's move on to our second selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Twisted Sister with Be Cruel to Your School. Be cruel to your school. All All right, so this is from Come Out and Play, which is considered the Jump the Shark album, where, you know, it's got the die cut cover and all that stuff and the ha-ha, kind of cool, Come Out and Play, the Warriors and all that. But it was a bridge too far for Twisted fans, for fans, you know, even potential Twisted fans, I suppose, as you're moving from Stay Hungry to this record. So, you know, this band has two of these, and actually both of these are from these consensus worst songs are from this record. The other one is Leader of the Pack, which brings up kind of an interesting point. I mean, some examples that came up, by the way, I got some nice help on this one in terms of some examples that I had forgotten by Neil Miller and Mick Phelan. So some of this stuff they came up with, I'll see if I could make sure I mention them later when some examples, actually in our honorable mentions for sure. But there's this neat concept or this idea that would we be cheating if we picked covers for this consensus worst song thing? So I haven't gone with covers because I think covers is a little bit of a cheap laugh. It's almost going too easy to pick a cover. And Leader of the Pack is a cover. But Be Cruel to Your School is not a cover. You know, Alice Cooper guests on this. He guests singing. So him and Dee do the trade-off vocals. Haha, the two shock rock guys. And this song about school. Alice Cooper had schools out. And then he's in the video as well. And they spell it Be Cruel to Your School. So cruel is spelt like school. So O-O-L. And school is spelt like cruel, U-E-L. How clever. You know, it's like, be cruel to your school in the name of rock and roll. Be cruel to your school just like a sister or a brother. Be cruel to your school in the name of rock and roll. Well, I don't think I'll make it through another day. It's 8 o'clock and all ain't well. My brain hurts so much, it's starting to decay and I'm living in my private hell. Didn't someone tell me this would be great? Be the best thing I ever had. How come they never told me about the word exaggerate? So yeah, it just goes on and on. It's just this kind of dopey old rock and roll song. It's kind of like a 60s, 50s rock and roll sort of song. It's got Barrel House piano, Barrel House barroom piano in it. Horns. So it's got some horn arrangements. It's got a sax solo. So everything you don't want to hear in a Twisted Sister song is thrown in here. So again, we're back to that whole jumping the shark thing. In fact, I did a jumping the shark episode, didn't I? And I hope I didn't include this song in that, but it definitely feels like, it would be a perfect example for that. I won't go into the whole what jumping the shark thing means, but yeah, the funny thing is I was there for that. It's a Happy Days episode. Go look it up. Anyways, this episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff is sponsored by BetterHelp. Without a healthy mind, being truly happy and at peace is hard. The good news is therapy works. But what is therapy exactly? It's whatever you want it to be. Maybe you're not feeling motivated right now and would like some tools to help. Or maybe you're feeling insecure in relationships or at work, not dealing well with stress. Whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better because you deserve to be happy. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself because you are your greatest asset. And special offer to History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff listeners, you can get 10% off your first month of professional therapy at betterhelp.com/5songs. That's better, HELP.com/5songs. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. All right, let's go on to our third selection and we shall discuss. This is Judas Priest with Parental Guidance. Say I waste my life away, but I live it to the full. And how would you know anyway? You're just Mr. Doe. Why don't you get into the things we do today? You could lose 20 years. Okay, Judas Priest from the Turbo album, April 14th, 1986. Now, this is a very contentious album with Judas Priest as well. This is their much vaunted stab at hair metal with guitar synthesizers and all that sort of stuff. So same sort of thing as Tai Shan, perhaps, or Be Cruel to Your School, for that matter. We've got a much derided album, and we're looking for the nadir situation on that album, the worst thing on that album. So the bad thing about this song, of course, is it's a really simple mid-speed melodic, not much to it, no real riff to it, sort of musical backing track, and it's essentially so I'll read a little of the lyrics here. You say I waste my life away, but I live it to the full. And how would you know anyway? You're just Mr. Dull. What a great burn there, eh? Why don't you get into the things we do today? You could lose 20 years right away. So we say we don't need no parental guidance here. So, you know, there's an element of, this is a band that's been around a long time. You eventually consider them adults, so here they are. You know, we're speaking for the youth, but they aren't the youngest band in the world. So you don't consider them, you know, kids, young rock and roll rebels, really, by Turbo at this point. They've tried many different things through their career. They were absolutely the best band ever in any genre from 1976 to 1979. They're legends, right? But here they are, like, hey, it's all about the kids, and we're the kids, and we're representing the kids, and we actually literally are kids, and we're singing to you. There's that kind of feel to it, right? So it feels really, really pandering. It obviously is pandering. It's also saying to, you know, all those old school Judas Priest fans, or whatever age you are of Judas Priest fans, but it's saying to you that we think our fans are 12 years old, kind of thing, right? So they're saying, you know, we think our fans are just kids and they're going to love this horse sort of thing. And, you know, there's the idea with this song. It's called parental guidance, which is a very strict term, because that term also is in the Parents Music Resource Center, PMRC sort of thing. With the parental guidance stickers, right? So the idea here is it's written as a response to Tipper Gore and the whole PMRC thing, where Eat Me Alive was one of the songs that was complained about. And then, you know, this all, the Senate or wherever, there were hearings about this whole thing. And it ended up, you know, kind of a win for the PMRC, I suppose, in terms of, you know, there were, you know, parental guidance stickers put on albums. But yeah, so it's written in a bit of a response to that. But again, the whole thing is with this song is the lyric is super annoying. The way it's sung is super annoying. It sounds almost like a schoolyard thing. The music is super annoying. And, you know, as we learn later, I mean, this is raging coke and alcohol years for Rob. You know, you read his autobiography, and you know, there's really not a lot about the music in it, and you really get the feeling at this point in time he's checked out of the band. He's not writing anything in a big way. It's hard to get anything out of him. It's like, oh, let's just get the job done sort of thing. Now, the funny thing with Priest is that, you know, and with some of these, let's see, any of them ones so far, or am I talking later? There's the idea that different generations can have different songs like this that are consensus worst songs. So Parental Guidance is one that has been around for a long, long time, and it's been a song that's complained about for a long, long time. But Priest, 20 years later, I guess 19 years later, came up with a song called Loch Ness. So they had this song, Loch Ness, on the much vaunted comeback album, Angel of Retribution, 2005, and it's 13 minutes long, longest thing Priest ever did up to that point. I think probably it is still, right? Anyways, super long song. And it's written about the Loch Ness Monster. And it's very annoying for a lot of reasons. Number one, it's written about the Loch Ness Monster. Remember, Exodus got heck for writing about piranhas, right? We've got gray mist drifts upon the water. The mere surface moves. Awakened of this presence, dispelling legend's proof. A beastly head of onyx with eyes set coals of fire. Its leathered hide glides glistening, ascends the heathen briar, heathered briar. This legend lives through centuries, evoking history's memories, prevailing in eternities. On and on and on. Loch Ness, confess. I don't know what that's all about. Your Terror of the Deep, Loch Ness, Distress, Malingers, What You Keep, Loch Ness, Protects Monstrosity, Loch Ness, Confess to Me. I guess Rob's saying, oh, the lake, Loch Ness, confess your secrets to me kind of thing. But, and the other thing that's super annoying about this song is that the whole Loch Ness thing sounds like a Russian folk tune. It sounds like except when they get into their sort of Russian backing vocals phase. Just kind of ridiculous all the way around. Okay, let's move on to our fourth selection here. Take a listen to this. This is The Police with Mother.
Well, the telephone is ringing. Is that my mother on the phone?
Okay, the Synchronicity album, the famed, huge, massive Synchronicity album where the band are fighting like cats and dogs. They're really not getting along. This is the last album they'd ever make, you know, following up the awesome Ghost in the Machine. And this one's more of a peaks and valleys album. It's got Every Breath You Take on it. It's got some good, kind of deep, thoughtful, scholarly Police, but it's got Every Breath You Take, and it's got some other sort of really kind of downwound, quiet sort of songs. So it feels, overall, it feels like a bit of a subdued album. But there's this song, Mother. So this is Andy Summers singing and writing this thing. And so you're also, with this song, Mother, you're also getting the idea that, you know, the band is sort of breaking apart and they're going into their different factions. And we've got songs by certain people that are showing up. But what it is, so Andy's singing it, but he's more like shouting it, and you know, he's mad at the domination of his mother in his life kind of thing. It's a pretty cool, funny song. The music on it is really crazy and dissonant, and reminds you a little bit of King Crimson, maybe a combination of both versions of King Crimson's, the 80s version and the 70s version. But as Andy has said, there's a quote from him. Let's see. We all have our family situations, and I had a pretty intense mother who was very focused on me. I was sort of the golden child, and there I was sort of fulfilling all of her dreams by being this pop star in The Police. I got a certain amount of pressure from her. It's not heavy. It was written kind of ironic to be kind of funny, but crazy. It's inspired a little bit by Captain Beefheart. It's something that's really off the wall. It was very bizarre. I think it freaked the record company out. When the album came out, we had all the press in the world watching us and talking about it. The reviews came in, and that song got written about so much because it was so off the wall and so ballsy to do that, because the band was having so much commercial success. There's a lot of things to unpack in there. It's true. This album, you know, is a really high-stakes corporate album. It's going to go on to sell a lot of copies, and it totally did. It's multi-platinum. I didn't look up what it was, but I don't know, 4-7 times, something like that. But huge album, and it is kind of the not the waste, but the risky use of 3 minutes or whatever it is on this record. He mentions Captain Beefheart, and you can hear Captain Beefheart in there too, and I think you hear it more in his vocal than anything else. Not particularly the music, but a little bit the music as well. The other thing I want to mention here, though, is, Police had a great sort of history of doing these sort of off-the-wall songs, but they also had quite a trend where they would use them as B-sides. So there was, I remember as a kid getting, what was it, Dead End Job, at Landlord, and what is it, Shambhala, I think it's called. But there's a lot of these cool Police tracks, that, you know, hidden. I've got this awesome pink... Police box set that gathers all this stuff together. It was really cool. One of the early box sets where they were giving you everything. But so they did this kind of stuff, and it's really cool that they did. But he's right about, it's a pretty big deal sticking a song like that you know, on such a big album. And it truly fits this episode perfectly, you know, consensus worst songs. It's the one song from The Police that most Police fans will put their hand up and say that was a bridge too far. You know, and one I thought of as well, and I think Mick Phelan thought of that one, because I thought of only kind of like a weak song for The Police, where I was thinking, is it really good enough to do as a thing? So I've got this category of sort ofs, right? But I was thinking da-da-da-da, because I remember as when we were coming up as Police fans, you know, that record, Zenyatta Mondatta, was annoying to me and my buddies because it seemed like just a thin, weak tea version of Regatta de Blanc. And then it had this nonsense song on it. So it had a nonsense lyric, but it was also just kind of like a poppy, watery, weak, light version of what made Regatta de Blanc so cool. So the song itself, the music was annoying, and then it had this lyric, which brings up another one of these kind of situations where Radio Gaga, for example. Radio Gaga is a song that a lot of fans... you know, maybe you're a mid-level Queen fan and said, hey, what's the worst Queen song of all time? You might come up with that one because you're thinking of a nonsense title, right? You know it's a nonsense title, so that annoyed you right off the bat. But then, you know, if you really know your Queen catalog, there's definitely a lot worse songs. But I thought that was kind of interesting how da-da-da-da totally leads you to Radio Gaga as possibly a worse Queen song. And on the Queen front, I want to mention, you know, there, I don't think there really is a consensus, but, you know, deep Queen fans will mention something like Staying Power or Body Language. So they'll find the Invisible Man. Because you can think of these choruses and these synth lines and all this stuff. So Queen is more like a band. There might be a few, and you know, there's no super big one that comes to mind. I don't know. Some people might say Crazy Little Thing Called Love. Some people might say Another One Bites the Dust, right? Which brings up another point, this idea of, you know, is it easier to come up with these things when you're thinking of, like, super famous songs? Anyways, let's move on to our fifth selection. Take a listen to this. This is Iron Maiden with The Angel and the Gambler. All right, so this is one that Neil Miller came up with this one. So great choice, because when people complain about Iron Maiden, this was the other one I was thinking about where it's a little bit generational. So so The Angel and the Gambler, this is from Virtual 11. It's, you know, many Maiden fans now consider this the worst Maiden song of all time. It's 9 minutes and 52 seconds long, but it's written to the point where it should have just been a short song. And the thing that people legendarily remember about this song is a couple things. But one is this, don't you think you could save me? Don't you think you saved my life? Or whatever the heck it is, that Blaze is tortured into singing over and over and over again, dozens and dozens of times, this completely lackluster, dull chorus. Steve's like, no, you got to sing it over and over and over and over again. And then there's also this really, really dated sort of Casio little synth line. And I dare to even call it a line because it's just literally one note stabs. It's ridiculous, right? And it's also just a really pedestrian song. It's not metal. It's not hard rock. Like, what is it? It just kind of goes along. Very, very dull song. Just a quote from my Iron Maiden book, Holy Smoke, Iron Maiden in the 90s. Let's see, what does it say here? The Angel and the Gambler. Subject of a famous row between Steve and Rod, Steve winning the argument to make the song the first single from the record against Rod's wishes. So they had a big fight about this. Rod did not want it to come out this way. But and then I say, attracted a fair bit of stick for its piercing, simple keyboard part, along with the chorus repeated too many times. Let's see. There was a video done for it. Steve says, when I came up with that song idea, I put it in a mini tape recorder while I was driving down the motorway, the M4 in Wales. And I distinctly remember saying to myself, this reminds me of The Who Meets the UFO. I don't think there's any Who in it or UFO in it. But anyway, so he says, so I took it in that direction. It has a real 70s feel to it rhythm-wise. Yeah, it does, which means nothing happens rhythm-wise. It's just dull. The whole thing's not produced well and all that. But the other point I wanted to make here is that this generational point, what's the other famous Maiden song for being the worst Maiden song of all time? Well, Quest for Fire, right? So you had this, When Dinosaurs Walk the Earth, and, you know, so you had this song on Peace of Mind. And the funny thing is, Peace of Mind is probably, you know, more or less consensus, the most revered Maiden album. Everything else on it is amazing. So it's kind of the whole different from Virtual 11. Everything else is amazing. So it made Quest for Fire stand out. It made that song stand out where you thought, this kind of didn't need to be here. It didn't need to be written. It looks like for the story, for the old caveman story, that they're kind of like grasping at straws. It's like, we need a topic. We need a song. Bruce, how about caveman? That kind of thing. And even the music on it, you know, the music is sort of standard, typical Iron Maiden, not particularly terrible. But, you know, you just think along with the other songs, which are exciting and they really feel like they have a reason to exist, this just feels like perhaps like a weaker version of Flight of Icarus. OK, we kind of have one of those on here. We don't need to put the weaker one on here. So that's something else that happens with these songs. But yeah, I thought it was funny that Maiden has two and they're generationally apart. OK. Just a few other examples here, honorable mentions. Led Zeppelin, I thought there were two, Jermaker and Hot Dog. Yes, I thought Don't Kill the Whale. King Crimson's a funny one. Could be something like Heartbeat, one of the mellowest songs from the 80s period. That 80s period rubs people the wrong way. I love it. Aerosmith doesn't really have one, but I always think of Aerosmith and Cheap Trick. For me personally, I always go to like I Don't Want to Miss a Thing for Aerosmith and The Flame for Cheap Trick. I think of their worst, egregious, worst examples of power ballads. And I think a lot of people would, those songs would come to top of mind for this. In my less strong department, I was thinking Motley Crue, what would that be? So I thought Smoking in the Boys Room maybe, but it's a cover. And then Neil came up with Brandon, so that was a good choice. Bluish Occult doesn't really have one, but for me, what rises is Beat 'Em Up, usually. Kiss doesn't really have one, I don't think, because, you know, there's so many angry Kiss fans and different factions defending the worst things that Kiss ever did. I almost venture not to even name a song, because I don't think you really could. Ted Nugent doesn't really have one, but people lean to the funny titles like Terminus El Dorado, Thunder Thighs, My Love is Like a Tire Iron. Genesis is a funny one. Neil Miller suggested this, but I thought, what am I thinking this right? You know, even before he suggested it, I thought, yeah, it kind of is, right? I thought they don't really have one, but then he said, Who Done It? And it's true. People point out Who Done It because it's almost like Mother by the Police. It's really kind of abrasive and weird and new wavy, and it definitely caught people off guard. I don't feel like Alice Cooper has one of these. I don't really feel if what the Grateful Dead one is. Maybe Deadheads have one that I don't know about. Metallica doesn't really have one, I don't think. I don't even want to go there, actually. Black Sabbath doesn't really have one, although you think possibly Illusion of Power and you think of the rap, right? So here we go with Rush and Roll the Bones with the rap. You know, people say that's Rush's worst moment, right? When they have the little rap on there, right? ELP... I thought maybe Lucky Man gets a little bit of abuse. I don't know. Neil mentioned Taste of My Love. I didn't think... Here's a good one that Neil came up with. So I didn't really think AC/DC had one, but he suggested Mistress for Christmas. People joke about that song. It's a Christmas song, which is kind of a cheap move to put on one of your albums. They did that. It's a funny ha-ha song. It's not even all that great. But yeah, that's a good one. So... I think if you asked AC/DC people this question, it would take them a long time to come up with anything. But as soon as you mention Mistress for Christmas, they would go, ah, you're right. That is it. Whole bunch of other bands I thought didn't really have one. Let's see. He mentioned Heart, All I Want to Do Is Make Love to You. He and Mick Phelan both mentioned, so this is a good one, Megadeth, Crush'em, and Breadline. And I totally remember when those came out, the abuse Megadeth took for those songs. So definitely very, very good point there. Quiet Riot, I thought maybe, you know, jumping the shark with the second Slave cover, a Slade cover, Mama, We're All Crazy Now. Let's see. Neil also mentioned David Bowie, The Laughing Gnome, Dream Theater, You Not Me, Starship, We Built This City, Def Leppard, Long, Long Way to Go, Queensryche, What We Do, Guns N' Roses, My World, you know, Offspring, Cruising California, The Beatles, Mr. Moonlight. All of these, I don't know if the deep fans would pick these. I just don't really have the knowledge of some of these. Like the Def Leppard and Bowie, I'm a massive fan, but those wouldn't have come to mind for me. Mick Phelan writes of Crush'em, is reviled as a symbol of risk chasing techno sounds, but insomnia is worse. I think with risk, people let the media tell them it is so awful, when in fact there are decent songs. It's not their worst song, and Crush'em isn't their worst song. Megadeth have many hated songs. Worst song, poor. Yeah, then he goes on and mentions, you know, their cover of Anarchy in the UK wasn't a great idea. To Le Monde, redoing that with Christina Scabbia. That was a little bit of jumping the shark moment. You know, I also thought for this episode you could have included maybe something like Raven doing a Gimme Some Lovin'. So here we are back into the covers. But yeah, that's kind of it. You know, I mean, Mick mentions a few other things where he kind of gets into album terrain, like Carcass, Swan Song, Metallica, Saint Anger. But that isn't really what this episode is about. Basically, to sum up, I wanted to see what are those bands where there literally are, you know, really, really like far and away winners. And that was the whole idea. All right. If you like this episode or this show and want to support future episodes, please go to Ko-fi, rhymeswithnofee.com/MartinPopoff, hit that red support button and buy me a coffee or a pint. This week, I would like to thank Joe Becht, Bel Air Expediting. I'm going to go on Joe's show shortly. We're gonna get an episode done. He's come up with some really cool ideas for his own YouTube channel. Bruce Campbell, David Fisher, Justin Griffin, Peter Kerr, Jamie Laszlo, Reed Little, Augustin Garcia de Paredes, Steve Polari, and Michael Thurston. There you go. MartinPopoff.com. For all your book needs. I know the Angel book says sold out, but I do have the Angel book. And I haven't done any drawings for a while, but I'm going to get back to that so you can see all that stuff at my ArtPal site. And yeah, the Bowie book. Still have a supply of the big, lush, awesome David Bowie book. I know it's kind of expensive, but yeah, it's a nicest book ever done for me. So there you go. Go play some of these consensus worst songs if you are brave, and we shall talk to you next week.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at R&R Archaeology.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com. Code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.